Hi, and welcome to another Modern Commerce Talks. And as always, I'm your host, Jack Stratton. Really pleased to be joined today by my colleague, Johan Sommer, Chief Strategist at Vensio. How are you doing, Johan?
I'm superb, thank you. It's good to be here talking to you again.
Yeah, so good. So me and Johan are talking today specifically about some of the trends we saw and what we saw on the ground happening at the NRF conference 2023 in New York, but also in some of the stores in New York itself. And we're thinking about, you know, how some of those trends that we've seen might impact what's going to happen in 2023. And so this is lovely because me and Johan get to reminisce after we had such a fun trip in New York. I'm tempted, to be honest, Johan, just to talk about like the food that we ate, but I need to, maybe that's another podcast.
I think that's another podcast, yeah.
So good. So forgetting about food for a minute, I'm going to start because I figure in this one, Johan, I'll focus on a bit more on stores, which makes sense. So I was running a load of store tours out there and you were obviously at the conference a lot, really looking at some of the most interesting exhibitors, the big keynotes. So maybe you focus on that. So I'll just think about a couple of things just to kick us off that really stood out in terms of what I've been seeing in New York from a store point of view. Now, something, Johan, you definitely remarked upon when we were walking around, and something that I've noticed, I've been talking to Evan about, is how New York feels like it's particularly ahead in terms of a trend I'm calling experience first design, experience first store design. I've sort of been thinking about it for a while. It's a really simple idea, but something that suddenly I can see happening in New York. And where it was obvious the most was that place, Slumu Institute, which we all really loved. So Slumu Institute, for listeners, is basically a slime retailer. They sell slime. Kids love slime, right? It's just kind of this weird, brightly colored, crazy slime that kids love. But their way to sell it through this store is that they've built the experience first. So most of the store is this absolutely vast and ticketed play area. And people can just go crazy running around. The kids are all going insane. Really, really good. And they can play with the slime, most importantly. What's really interesting is you can tell when you're in that store, and I don't know what you thought of this, Johan, but you can tell the experience was built first, right? And then the products are just kind of
obvious.
Like,
obvious that everybody wanted to go in there just to experience, and shopping was in the second store.
Exactly. And then the products are on the way out. The store is actually split into two. It has two entrances, one for to queue up for the experience, which is ticketed, which is paid. People pay for it. So kids go in there for half an hour, now go wild. And then on their way out, of course, they're buying slime. And then when they're at home and they're online, they're buying slime. Of course, they're doing that. But what I find interesting is, it seems like a simple idea that, but so many retailers, if you just take the toy industry, they still have their stores full of product. And what they do is they try and put an experience in the store. So you've still got loads of product. You've still got the traditional store planning that goes on. And then there's some sort of area where you can try a toy. And it just never kind of, if I think of Hamleys in the UK, one of the most famous toy stores in the world, it's still mostly just product. It's still just rows and rows and rows of toys. And here I was thinking, no, the experience hasn't been plugged in afterwards. The experience came first. I saw this at other stores in New York, and I can give some other examples, but that to me is a big one. I think we're now, 2023, we're at a point where when retailers are talking about stores being experiential, having experiences in them, that's the bar. They have to be experiences where that's the main event. That's the reason you're in the store. And then you just sell products around the edge. As someone who sees this a lot, I'm really bored of retailers talking about experiential design in store, and it's just some coffee in the corner or whatever. I think we've moved on from that. I don't know what you thought about that, Johan, but I know in Slumu you thought it was really cool as well.
I thought it was really cool. And I'm thinking about this old quote from, I think it's Andy Warhol, who said that museums will be stores and stores will be museums. You see, so in a way
exactly.
That they sort of, yeah, and it was in a way right there, because there's a, MoMA got their own store now, and it's actually a big art museum. And you can see from this as well that experience is key. And I would like to sort of look into that as well, because we also saw a lot of luxury, and luxury was quite focused in the NRF exhibition as well. A lot of keynotes regarding luxury. And we also saw a lot of stores doing more sort of experience based on luxury, or not only experience, but just to take, for example, the Golden Goose, where you're sort of refurbishing your shoes. That's sort of premium products. And I think that was, from a sort of NRF perspective, a lot about talk about premium and especially luxury. And I think the reason why is because in luxury, you still have the, if you are successful, you still have the margins to do things. You don't need to handle the big volumes. You have more sort of clienteling relationship with your customers and so on. Mm. So I think that sort of also, it's easier to do fun retail if you have margins. You don't need to sell those kind of volumes to make your money and so on. Even though the example you talk about, the slime experience, yeah, probably high margins, but not luxury. So you don't have to be luxury. But I think that's sort of a connection to what we talked about on the NRF fair.
And did you see at NRF as well? Because I saw a little bit of this, but you spent more time at the conference. Did you see a lot of kind of tech or e-com digital companies with, I don't know, concept solutions that were around this kind of re-commerce trend? Like, because I saw quite a few things.
Yeah, that was quite interesting. A lot of talks. And back to luxury again or premium. It's much easier to resell a product if you are sort of your first retail value is quite high. And also there's a hype around that product, a limited supply of that product. So, for example, if you sell a T-shirt for, say, $5, no one is going to pay anything for it in the last sort of in the next step. But if you say sell a Louis Vuitton bag or you sell some more expensive things, and what I actually saw, and I saw that from a couple of the keynotes, that there are a lot of the brands have tried to do them themselves, but realized that the consumer actually would like to buy their vintage or their resale goods at someone else who's got a broader range. So yeah. I think it was Harrods who had a collaboration with someone else taking care of the resale part of it. And still, there's still a lot of AI discussion regarding resale of luxury, especially when it comes to if it's the real product, how can you certify that it's the real thing, and how do you do that in scale? Because if you're gone, even though you have margins in the resale when it comes to luxury, you still need to handle a lot of boxes of products, and you need to set the right price, you need to know where to send that goods into what location and so on. So yeah, I saw some discussion more than solutions regarding that. I think in the sort of tech exhibition, as always, as you see on NRF, you see some emerging trends. There were quite a lot playing around with holograms of different sorts. I'm quite tall, so I tried one of these and I was too tall to fit into to that section. So there was sort of some sort of gimmicky things out there, but that I think within a year or so will be useful for retailers. But resell, of course, a big discussion, the whole thing regarding that. And also some talk about sustainability, but I would say that the main view on sustainability connected to the sort of darker macro trends is that the consumer right now cares about themselves, their family, their community, and Earth and the rest of the world comes sort of step six. So it's not a real push right now for sustainability from a consumer perspective, but of course it's sort of the base plate or the foundation for every retail to address these questions. Do you see that sort of sustainability is taking different form in the retail you saw in New York?
I think probably the thing that I noticed the most is that probably the most meaningful things that I saw, and I probably didn't notice some of the kind of more PR led stuff, are maybe some of those more business model changes. I talked to you a bit more about this, but where you could see in store a conscious effort by a retailer to come up with an idea that made kind of doing sustainable things within the store, like getting people to bring an old piece of whatever in, a handbag, shoes, clothes, and get it resold, remade, repaired, whatever, to actually make that something that works financially for the business and is scalable across different stores. That was why I liked Golden Goose so much. You mentioned it earlier, Johan. So Golden Goose have this concept called Forward, which is in Milan. It started out in Milan. It's now in New York, and they're going to spread it to other cities. And I've seen lots of brands do similar things. So basically, they're telling customers, bring in your old sneakers and we can either recycle them, we can repair them, we can remake them completely, turn them into something new, or we can resell them. So the store can become a little marketplace for resold Golden Goose sneakers. And they have a different price list and they have everyone in all their special cobblers and makers in store doing it. So it looks great and it's a great idea. What I like the most is the price list in the store. the fact that it's actually something now they're saying, well, we're going to do this at lots of different stores, and we're going to find a way and a price point that makes it work for our business, because that made it feel less like a PR stunt to me. When I see businesses doing this, but they're just doing it for free, I think, well, you're never going to do that at scale, are you? Because if you're not charging for it, how is it going to work? You know, unless it's in the business from the beginning, like a Patagonia or Nudie Jeans, where that's what they do from the beginning, which I love. But these other businesses that haven't done it from the beginning, I want to see them charging for resale, right? Because then I know, well, then they're going to keep doing it if they can actually at least cover their costs. So that's why I like Golden Goose, because they're doing it. And when you go in there, you see them. You see people in the store remaking, repairing. You can see some of the shoes up for resale. It's nice to see it actually happening, not as a stunt, but a real world kind of business model. So I liked that. We went to the Real Real store. For anyone who doesn't know the Real Real, it's exactly what we've been talking about. So it's resale for luxury. It's one of the biggest kind of examples of it in the UK, in the US, sorry. So it's an online marketplace for reselling luxury items. But they have a couple of stores. And it's interesting going in the store in New York, because it's what you're effectively in is a charity shop. But because it's luxury, it's a beautiful store. It's really cool. Everyone is kind of young and very fashionable in there. And it's incredibly busy. It's one of New York's busiest stores. That's an interesting experience in itself, because to walk in there and be in a store that is completely about resale shows you that actually part of the battle in it, certainly in the fashion world around sustainability, is making resale cool. It sounds slightly depressing to put it like that, because we shouldn't have to think of it in those terms. Everyone should be obsessed with sustainability, you know, simply because of the fact of it. But the reality is it has to be cool to make it work at scale with younger buyers. And the Real Real do that, regardless of what anyone might tell me about how sustainable they are as a business. What I do like is they're making reselling cool. And you can see that when you go to the New York store. And I love that. It's very much like Depop, I think, in the UK, for the people that know that marketplace.
And I'd like to add to that. It needs to be cool, but it also needs to be scalable from a system perspective. So if you connect that back to the NRF, there was a lot of talk about AI and so on, and there's a sort of a lot of buzz regarding AI. But here you can see that if you're going to scale these kind of business models, you need the system and the machine learning to be able to authenticate and set the right prices and all these things. And to do that in scale, you can't use people to do that. You need to have systems to do that. I think that also interesting to see that a lot of these business models, if you're going to do them at scale, you need to have new tools or use the tools in a different way. And another thing that I would take away from the retail safari we made, and it's also connected to sort of post-pandemic US retail, there's a lot of staff in the stores, but it's quite obvious that they're quite new hires. And they're also hiring new employees. So there's a lot of employees in the stores that don't have a clue why they're there. And connect that back to the NRF fair, there was a lot of talk about staff empowerment, so giving tools to the staff. And I think that was quite fun to see during the NRF retail fair, that there was a lot of talk about that, those tools to do that. And when you're walking around in the stores, you see, yes, the US retail really needs these kind of tools. And of course, we do see that in Scandinavia and Europe as well. But since the layoff in US has been much bigger and the new recruitment is higher as well, there's a bigger gap there than we see in Swedish retail. Swedish retail hasn't affected that much, or haven't sacked so many people and rehired them. So during the NRF, one of the key topics was, well, called employee empowerment with tools, with knowledge about the range, about the clients, so clienteling, and also, of course, omnichannel capabilities. How can we send this product, and how can we do that in a way that the newly hired staff can handle?
Just on that, that's really interesting to me. At the conference, did you see anything? Were there lots of businesses or tools, solutions? Were things kind of, in a general sense, progressing? Were you seeing examples of that you thought were really, really good, where it was very fluent and it worked really, really well? Because I think that I've seen some really good examples of technology around clienteling, for example. There's some fashion retailers use clienteling a lot and really help staff to, you know, kind of maximize sales for some of their most loyal customers and that kind of cool stuff. But I haven't seen it progress that much, if I'm honest, in the last kind of 5-6 years. It seems to still be at the same level of, you know, it's like a high-tech version of the old little black book of contact, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And what do you think?
Agree with you. I agree with your analysis, absolutely. On the tech side, well, things have happened, but for these solutions to work, it's a lot of change management and implementation into your business. And I think that's also something that one of my biggest takeaway from the NRF, sort of also connected to the combination of good technology and good implementation, was actually Lululemon's talk about RFID. RFID is one of the things that's been sort of, people have been talking about RFID, that could be sort of the solution for your quality of your stock in your stores, and you could do a lot more things if you have 100% accuracy in your stock levels in all your touch points and so on. And almost always fails on bad implementation, but they was quite focused on that. Well, technology start to be mature, is now quite mature, but the implementation and all the steps you need to take to actually transform your business model, that's the big thing. Tech, of course, big thing, a lot of data, but also the precision in the rollout of doing this. And I think it's the same thing with some of these CRM and clienteling tools and sort of these kind of tools. Great tools, but you need to have the implementation and the change management and the learning and all these things. And a lot of the keynotes was about that. How do you involve your customers your staff into using these tools, actually?
That goes back to an age-old thing that I experience in stores all the time, which is that I hear from head office about a new tech partnership between a brand and a tech company. Our staff are using this amazing tool. And then you go into the stores and it's clear that actually on the ground, even if it's available, the staff aren't really using it, or they're not really understanding how to get the best use out of it. And then you realize, yeah, they've made this investment, but they haven't actually done the proper training. They haven't got the cultural stuff right. It's an interesting point, because this tech for a lot of retail staff is a big shift, a massive shift. If suddenly, rather than doing it the old fashioned way, they're doing everything through a screen. I think that's a really good point. Before we wrap up, Johan, there's one more thing I wanted to ask you, because the one thing I had lots of conversations about, and I didn't actually see that much of it at the conference, but I wanted to find out from you. Self-checkout, autonomous payments, that kind of retail trend. I felt like the conversations I was having, it feels like maybe last time I was at NRF last year or slightly before the pandemic, the conversation around that was always kind of, the language even was Amazon Go. It still seemed fairly futuristic, self-checkout. I mean, you guys, eventually you've done self-checkout for some clients for a long time, but it felt like most conversations were kind of, oh, it's an Amazon Go thing. It's still like a kind of proof of concept thing. That feels like it's really moved forward. And now it's not so much people talking about self-checkout, but which type of self-checkout you might have.
Yeah, and I think that's really, I was actually watching one of the keynotes regarding that, and it was different vendors that together said that we need to lower the cost for the Amazon experience of self-checkout. So there's a lot of ways of doing self-checkout, from your browser in your own phone to an app to a hardware to the more sort of futuristic Amazon Go, sort of with cameras and detecting what kind of product and so on, and who you are connected to, loyalty and so on. And they talked about that yes, the customers are ready for it, but we need to find a way how we can scale this. And if you as a retailer don't want to just have one partner, the other partners need to sort of collaborate. Who's the best camera supplier? Who's the best when it comes to this and that part of it? And how can they work together? And there's also in that keynote, they also talk quite about other areas where self-checkout solution can be used. So, for example, for a community warehouse with all the things needed for the playgrounds in that area. Well, that could be a self-checkout solution for that. Monitoring the inventory, making sure that the right people taking out the right products and so on. So there are other areas in the infrastructure where that technology can be used. And by being used there, it's easier to scale it and the cost comes down. So I would say that, yes, I think most people find that, especially in convenience, the self-checkout of different ways, different types are really interesting. The technology starts to be mature. The consumer behavior is also there. But if you want to do this walk-in, walk-out kind of experience like the Amazon Go, you need to have quite a lot, still have quite a lot of different tech partners if you don't want to have all your eggs in the same bag. So I'm with your analysis there. And also a question, how do you integrate that experience to the rest of your omnichannel or unified commerce experience? So with loyalty, gamification, and so on. So there's always sort of more to add to that. And of course, also personalization with personalized offers if there's a self-service. And this area is something that we at Avanci are looking into from different angles, mostly from an e-com perspective. How can we use the knowledge we have about the consumer, the price, the content and products and so on? But I think that we will see more here. And so that's nice. In this short talk now, we're also scratching the surface of everything that's come from NRF. Yeah. But I would say that, am I shocked, or is anything that I saw during NRF that was totally new for me, or like, no, I didn't see that? I think it was, do you agree with that? It was more sort of aligning with the thoughts we already had.
And that's I felt the same. Yeah, I wonder whether this was the year that NRF came back. And actually, maybe it's next year where we start to see the real cut through in terms of new ideas. I thought it was great, but yeah, overall, I didn't have tons of situations where maybe like previous years, I was seeing stuff that I'd never even imagined. I agree with you. I may be just seeing slightly evolved versions of stuff I've seen before.
Could it be, and this is just my spontaneous analysis, I think it was my fourth NRF, and the first one, there was more sort of in-store gimmicky kind of products. Sort of hologram similar or other experience that was really cool sort of 4 years ago, but most retail, and as you mentioned before, it's really hard to implement and it's not really giving business value. And it was less of those kind of fun but gimmicky kind of tools and solutions, which I think is quite refreshing.
I agree. And I think that is a reflection of something I've seen over the last year or two anyway, which is that I'm seeing actually a lot less in-store tech and a lot less gimmicky in-store tech. Well, that's probably going to carry on through the global recession because there's probably less money to be wasted on experimenting with vague in-store tech ideas. And actually, it's probably time to focus more money on optimizing the stuff that you've already got. So, I completely agree. I'm seeing the same thing. Johan, sadly, looking at the time, that's all we've got time for. We could talk for a lot longer about it, of course. And we have already, really, away from this particular recording. But Johan, thanks so much for your insights. That was a great chat.
Thank you, Jack. It was a pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. And we'll be back with another one soon. But thanks very much for taking time to listen to this one. And of course, as always, you can hear loads more of these up on the Avanci website. Take care. Thanks a lot.